It's our pleasure to welcome Rob Raines. Rob, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Frank. I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
Very good. So much to discuss. First of all, I thought it was kind of fitting on this crazy season that McFarland and Garcia were out there in the game clincher. Those two have just kind of told the story of this miraculous season, how they came from nowhere and have been so effective, and they were on the mound last night in the biggest game of the year.
Yeah, they're a big part of why they're where they are. I mean, you know, remember before the Cardinals got them, before they got LeBlanc, and even before they made the trades for Happen last year, I mean, this team was basically just floundering, you know, game above 500, game below 500, all kinds of pitching issues, whether it was in the rotation because of the injuries or the bullpen. I mean, those, and I don't think anybody knew what to expect, especially from those two guys. I mean, at least, you know, like LeBlanc had some success in the big leagues, but, you know, Luis Garcia and TJ McFarland, I mean, who would have thought back in July that they would be the two saviors for that bullpen?
So how do you think they handle Wainwright from here till next Wednesday, likely in L.A.?
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting thing. I mean, I could see a scenario where you want to pitch him maybe sometime in between now and then, like a Saturday game for like just three innings or something, 50 pitches or something. But I also could see them just kind of maybe letting him throw an extended bullpen side session kind of thing somewhere in there so he doesn't have to worry about facing hitters or whatever. So, you know, he's been around long enough. He knows how to handle, you know, his body and his preparation better than anybody else. So I think they'll just talk to him and say, what do you want to do? What would have you be best ready? You know, do you want a whole week off? Do you want, you know, a side session? You want, you know, limited start? I don't know what they're going to do. That'd be interesting to see how they handle that.
So who do you think, if they were to win, if they were to beat the Dodgers and they open up against the Giants in the NLDS, is it Michaelis probably, or is it Lester, or is it Happ?
Yeah, if they use Wainwright in the wild card game and they win, I would think you pitch Lester in game one. I you know, assuming he's healthy, and we'll see how that goes the next few days too. You know, if he's probably going to start at some point in here Friday or Saturday, I would think. And if he's healthy, then yeah, he's been, you know, the last three or four starts, you know, your best bet, and a veteran with a postseason pedigree that, you know, includes a world championship. I mean, to me, he's the guy that would pitch that first game, and then just depending on the schedule after that, you know, maybe Michaelis in two, you know. Maybe Happ, I don't know what they're going to – depends maybe on what they think is better, if it's a left-hander or a right-hander, or if they think one guy's better at home than not. I mean, I think it would line up for Wainwright to come back and pitch game three at home, you know, from a rest standpoint, because the game would be Wednesday and then Monday, so he'd have 4 days rest, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, I think the question would be who would pitch game two.
It would have to be Michaelis. I mean, if Michaelis is really good tonight. In fact, if Michaelis is really good tonight, Rod, that would be three great outings in a row. I think he'd get some consideration for game one.
Yeah, I would think, well, maybe, yeah. Again, it depends on kind of how the rest of the series matches up with days off, you know, which you kind of look at it, too, from a standpoint, okay, if this guy pitches game one, then he would pitch game, whatever, four or five or whatever, you know, something. I think they have to kind of look at the series as a whole and not just, you know, who would match up better for that one particular start. But again, it's also home versus road consideration, and they got to get there first. I mean, you know, you're going to be playing, whether you play the Dodgers or the Giants in the wild card game, you're going to be playing a team that won over 100 games in the season, and is going to have their main, unless the Dodgers and Giants tie and they have to use their best Scherzer and Gosman to go in that tiebreaker game to see who wins the division, which is probably the best case scenario for the Cardinals, then, you know, you'll face their best guy in that game.
I'm not sure of the exact numbers for that wild card roster, but do you think there's a tough decision to make with Rendon and Carpenter? Would it come down to one of those two, or you'd take them both?
I think at least for the – I think it's 26. I think it's the same roster as you'd have for the regular season before, you know, September 1st. I think you take them both, because I think in that one-game scenario, there's other guys you could weave off. I mean, whoever – because you can change the roster again before the division series starts. So whoever's pitching game one and two – of that division series doesn't need to be on the roster for that game. Lester or Michaelis, or, you know, because they're not going to play in that game anyway. So you can buy a couple extra roster spots and manipulate the roster a little bit just to make sure you're covered that way and have enough arms in the bullpen. But I think both those guys will be on the roster. I think both those guys will be on the roster for the division series too.
It may be a moot point because the shortstop Edmundo Sosa may not be ready, but let's say DeJong continues to play well. That'll be an interesting decision in the wild card game too. It's short if DeJong continues to hit, correct?
Sure, and I think it depends on Sosa's health, too. I think they're going to try to get him back at some point this weekend. Luckily, now they've bought a few extra days here. If he can come back by prior Saturday, get a couple of games under his belt before that wild card game, I think he'd be ready to go. You know, the thing about Sosa is he has, and you look at the numbers, he's been much more effective as a starting player than as a part-time, you know, bench player. And I think DeJong is probably a better pinch hitting option than Sosa. So if Sosa's healthy, I think he gets the start. But then I think you can see DeJong coming up in a key pinch hitting situation, maybe.
I got to tell you, I know we were all high on Carlson, but you were particularly high on him, and you always predicted stardom. And his numbers are not, like, alarming for, you know, 2021. It's 16 homers, 60 RBIs. But if you throw in the fact that he's 22, and I mentioned this in the opening monologue, I was watching BP yesterday, and just the ball just comes off his bat differently. Well, what do you think, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, how good he can be and what his numbers could look like?
Well, I know I always predicted he could be a 2020 player, and I still think that. I mean, the stolen bases is probably the last part of it. You know, they always say the power is the last thing to come. Well, he's got 16 homers at 22. I mean, you know, so I think he could project a couple years from now. He's in the 25 to 30 range probably home run-wise. And I think, you know, I still think he could steal more bases if they give him the opportunity to steal. It hasn't been a big part of his game this year, but I still think it can be down the road. He may not be the fastest base runner, but I think he's a very solid, you know, savvy base runner and can pick his spots kind of to go a little bit. But, you know, and I think, you know, I always thought he would project it better to me as a center fielder, but the way he has played in right this year and some of those catches he's made up against the fence and up against the corners, you know, I think he's really kind of come into his own as a right fielder. And I don't think, you know, I know we talked about this before, but, you know, one of the things the Cardinals were committed to this year was to see what they had in Tyrone, Neil, Harrison Bader, and Dylan Carlson. I mean, they made that clear, crystal clear back in the spring that was their goal, was to give these guys an opportunity to see what they could do. Well, I think they've got their answer.
Yeah, we all know that Tyler O'Neill could be headed to an All-Star game. In fact, Jim Bowden came out with his all-major league team, and O'Neill was like one of the three or four left fielders he mentioned. So O'Neill's headed that way. Do you think Carlson is an All-Star eventually?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question about that.
All right. How do you think they play it? Now, normally, if you've clinched and you have absolutely nothing to play for, you can't improve your lot in life at all, no matter what happens, you think, okay, right, Let's give everybody a rest. But you had this gaudy 17-game win streak. I mean, with the exception of Molina, do you think they'll really change things? They got to rest his shoulder, but don't you think they'll keep playing basically the same lineup?
Yeah, I think basically, because remember, you'll have 2 days off after the game on Sunday, too, you know, and that'll probably be a night game, so you basically will have 2.5 games off. You'll have to travel in there, but they'll probably travel on Monday, so they'll have them a day of workout on Tuesday out there and be ready to go on Wednesday night for that game. So I suspect, you know, there's a day game tomorrow after the night game tonight, and the weather forecast, I understand, is like a 50% chance of rain. So I suspect you'll get a couple of guys maybe out of the lineup tomorrow for that game. You probably want to give a couple of at-bats sometime this weekend to some of the guys that you may use in a pinch-hitting role. You know, I would say Goldschmidt and Arenado will get one day off here at some point this week. Maybe Edmonds, since he's played almost every day. Maybe O'Neill, but they'll space it out, so you'll have the majority of guys playing all the time, I think.
Tony La Russa was always very conscious of players getting to individual milestones, so you want to get Goldie to 100. I guess there's an outside shot. He's hitting .296. He'd have to have like a Ted Williams kind of finish. Any other numbers out there that the manager would be conscious of a player getting to?
I don't. Well, DeJong's got 19 homers, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So 20 would be a nice number, but you can't predict, you know, a guy hitting a home run. You obviously give him the opportunity to play to do that. But nothing else that stands out to me that I'm aware of. I mean, Edmund has a shot at, you know, leading the league in doubles, and an outside shot. He has a big weekend stolen base-wise to possibly catch Trey Turner and lead the league in stolen bases. But I don't think there's anything else that jumps out at me that I haven't looked into it to figure it out if it is.
You know, I talked to Edmund yesterday, and he said point blank, I'm disappointed in my season. I think I can do better. Now, he leads the league in doubles, and he's second in stolen bases. What do you think the upside? Do you think he figures out the walks a little bit better and becomes more of an on-base percentage guy? I mean, that's basically the only flaw in his game, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the consistency, maybe. I mean, he'll go through a stretch where he's really hot, and then, like, that first part of that or middle part of that road trip where he was like 0 for 13 or whatever. So, I mean, he does have some little peaks and valleys. He doesn't strike out very much. He said that when he gets in a slump, he does tend to strike out a little bit more than normal. But I think it's just a matter of, you know, getting used to being an everyday player. I mean, I know he's played a lot in the past, but he's kind of still bounced around from position to position. I think this year was a key year for him to number one, establish himself in the leadoff spot, and number two, establish himself as the everyday second baseman. So I think, you know, that experience when it's all said and done, and especially, I mean, don't forget, too, and it's not just in Edmund's case, but, you know, I still think a lot of guys are feeling the effect of playing 60 games last year. I still think that whole, you know, shortened season and everything was such a truncated season. And I still think guys now, especially getting back into the groove of playing 162, that, you know, the transition onto your body is not easy. I know you're a trained professional athlete and you train for that and you're prepared for that still, but that's a big adjustment to make. So I give these guys a lot of credit for everything they've accomplished this year because it hasn't been easy, I don't think.
All right, let's talk Jack Flaherty. Let's just say, Rob, he gets two successful stints between now and Sunday. Would he be your first guy in relief of Wainwright on Wednesday if he shows he's Jack Flaherty?
Yeah, I'd like to see him pitch once in the bullpen before, because he's never done, you know, I don't think he's done that. If he did, it was real early in his career, you know. So I think I'd like to see him get in the game as a reliever just to kind of get his feet wet like that sometime this weekend. You know, don't forget, maybe he's the guy that you start in game two. You know, if he gets it, you know, where he could get up to 50 pitches or something, give you two or three innings, and then you go to Hudson for the middle three. I mean, maybe that's the way they go with the two and save Michaels for that game three start at home. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of different ways they can handle that, but they've got to see him pitch again and pitch well at least once, if not twice, sometime this week, I think.
Well, what if they're both good in the remaining five or six games? They both get a couple of outings and they're both solid, Hudson and Flaherty. And you know you have to keep McFarlane and Garcia and Gallegos and Reyes. And
yeah, tough decisions there.
Gallegos, it's like, so a guy like Andrew Miller could be in trouble here making the roster, correct?
Yeah, you would hate to say that for a veteran player, but again, he's you know, probably not coming back to this team after this year, so that always makes it a little bit easier. It's always more of a dicey question. KK, too, you know, it's always more of a dicey question about you know, leaving a guy off the postseason roster if you expect him to come back and be on your team next year. But with both those guys being pending free agents, that kind of maybe will make their decision a little bit easier for them. I think you can pick the five or six guys you know are going to be in the bullpen. And then, you know, those last two or three spots, it's going to be some tough decisions, I think.
Boy, what Cardinal fans should be hoping for is for the Giants to lose a little bit and the Dodgers to keep winning, so there's some drama, so there's a reason to use Scherzer. When is Scherzer scheduled to go again?
They've got him on schedule at pitch game 163. I mean, I think he could pitch Sunday if they need him to pitch to try to get to win the division on Sunday, but otherwise I think he'd pitch 163 on Monday or the wild card game, either one.
Boy, wouldn't that be great? Well, no, but I will say this. The Dodgers have some good options.
The way everything's gone for the Cardinals this month, don't bet against it happening. You know, I mean, that double magic maybe can apply to, you know, California as well, even if it's games the Cardinals aren't playing.
You know, I guess when the Cardinals were 44 and 47, not only did people want to fire the general manager and president, John Mozeliak, they also were not wild about Mike Schilt, and the cynics were ticked off that he was just so optimistic after bad losses, still gushing about his players. And now we look at Mike Schilt. It's three seasons as a big league manager, and it's three postseason appearances. What about an overview on Mike?
Well, I think he's a very calm guy. I mean, I think he probably is not as fiery a manager as some people would like to see, although we've seen him get fired up like he did on that game on Sunday in Chicago. I mean, we've seen that come out of him a little bit, but for the most part, you know, he's very calm, collected individual. But I also think he's an incredibly smart baseball man. I think he is a very good communicator with his players. It's been hard for the media to see that this year since we don't have the access that we normally have. It's hard to see how everything meshes in that clubhouse. But I think there's guys in that clubhouse that would run through the wall for him. I mean, there's still guys in that clubhouse that played for him in the minor leagues, or, you know, that he has had a relationship with for a long time. So I think that those guys go to bat for him, and I think they're you know, he believes in them, so they believe in him. And I think that that trust factor goes a long way. He was talking about it last night after the game, you know, that it's the determination of the hard work that goes into it. Even when you don't always have the rewards that you want, they never lost that focus and never lost that, you know, willingness to work hard and be prepared.
Boy, he's just an awfully nice guy, too, isn't he? There's
yeah,
just nothing.
Exactly. He's a guy you want to root for. Sure. Easy guy to root for.
In terms of manager of the year, I guess Gabe Kapler is going to get it, though, right?
Yeah. Kapler or Council. I would think Kapler. But you tend to probably vote for a guy that had achieved more success than you expected going into the season. And that's certainly the case with the Giants. I mean, a lot of people picked the Brewers to win the division, you know, going into the season. So, I mean, I think Council's right there, every bit as good as Kapler, and every bit the best manager in the league right there with Shelton and you know, probably the guy in Atlanta. But, I would be surprised if Kapler doesn't win it.
Yeah, and nobody had the Giants at 102 wins, or 103 now as we speak. So
no, everybody thought the Dodgers would roll over everybody in that division, or if there was a team that was going to give the Dodgers trouble, it'd be San Diego.
All right, before we let you go, give us your thoughts on the Dodgers. I know it's not a series; it's likely going to be one game, but boy, all the MVPs on that roster—just how do you win this game?
Well, I think you have a better chance of winning a one-game playoff against the Dodgers than you do a five-game series. To me, if I have to pick which team I'd rather play, even facing Scherzer, to me, if I have to play, you know, one game to get in between those two teams, I'd pick the Dodgers because I think you'd have a better chance of anything can happen. You know, I mean, we've seen fluky games in this series. You know, Wainwright's pitching. I mean, you've got to expect that it'll be a low-scoring game and one hit here or one, you know, misplay by the defense there. I mean, I don't think that the Dodgers intimidate the Cardinals really at all, and I know the Giants don't. So I think if they could get into the wild-card game with the Dodgers, get past that, and go into the series against the Giants, I think, you know, that would be exactly the way the Cardinals would draw it up.
Great stuff. Rob, honored to have you on. I'll see you at the ballpark today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate it.
All right, Rob Raines. He is a great follow on Twitter after Cardo games. I'm telling you, nobody does it better than Rob.